Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, third chapter, text number 35. Evam janmani karmani hi akartu ajanasya cha varnayanti sma kavaya vedaguyani Ritpati. Evam janmani karmani. Evam janmani karmani. Hi akartur ajanascha. Hi akartur ajanasya cha. Varnayanti smakavayo. Varnayanti smakavayo. Vedaguyam vedaguyani ritpate. Vedaguyani ritpate. Evam janmani karmani. Yahi akartur ajanasya cha Varnayanti smakavayo Vedaguyani ritpate. Others. Evam janmani karmani. Yakartur ajanasya cha.
Vaishnavis.
Evam. Thus. Janmani. Birth. Karmani. Activities. He. Certainly. Akartu. Of the inactive. Ajanasya. Of the unborn. Cha. N. Varnayanti. Describe. Sma. In the past. Kavaya. The learned. Vedaguyani. Undiscoverable by the Vedas. Ritpate. Of the Lord of the Heart. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Thus, learned men describe the births and activities of the unborn and inactive, which are undiscoverable even in the Vedic literatures. He is the Lord of the Heart. Purport. Both the Lord and the living entities are essentially all spiritual. Therefore, both of them are eternal, and neither of them has birth and death. The difference is that the so-called births and disappearances of the Lord are unlike those of the living beings. The living beings who take birth and then again accept death are bound by the laws of material nature. But the so-called appearance and disappearance of the Lord are not actions of material nature, but are demonstrations of the internal potency of the Lord. They are described by the great sages for the purpose of self-realization. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord that His so-called birth in the material world and its activities are all transcendental. And simply by meditation on such activities, one can attain realization of Brahman and thus become liberated from material bondage. In the Shrutis, it is said that the birthless appears to take birth. The Supreme has nothing to do, but because He is omnipotent, everything is performed by Him naturally, as if done automatically. As a matter of fact, the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His different activities are all confidential, even to the Vedic literatures. Yet, they are displayed by the Lord to bestow mercy upon the conditioned souls. We should always take advantage of the narrations of the activities of the Lord, which are meditations on Brahman in the most convenient and palatable form. Om Aginatam Ananda Shaj Inanjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Lutam Yena Tasma Shri Gudavena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upagadamayam Dharati Swapadantikam. So I'm going to work through this purport a little bit. This Prabhupada opens up by saying, both the Lord and the living entities are essentially all spiritual. Therefore, both of them are eternal, and neither of them has birth and death. So that's very reminiscent of the famous verse from the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Natuvaham Jatu Nasam, Natwam Name Janadipad, Natriva Nabhavishama, Sarve Bhayamatakpadam, where Krishna tells Arjuna, never was a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall never cease to be. Then Prabhupada goes on to say, the difference is that the so-called births and disappearances of the Lord are unlike those of the living beings. The living beings who take birth and then again accept death are bound by the laws of material nature. But the so-called appearances and disappearances of the Lord are not actions of the material nature, but are demonstrations of the internal potency of the Lord. So I think that couple sentences referring to the verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Ajopi san avyatma bhutanam ishvaro pisan prakatim swamahistaya sambhavami atmamaya, that he says, although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all sentient beings, still I event myself millennium after millennium. So he's making that same point there. And Prabhupada says, they are described by the great sages for the purpose of self-realization. And it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord that His so-called birth and in the material world and His activities are transcendental. Does anybody want to try what verse is that Prabhupada's referring to there? I'll give a hint if it's needed. I'll read it again. It says here, it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord that His so-called birth in the material world and His activities are all transcendental. Should be an easy one, actually. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. All right, so that's that one. And Prabhupada goes on, simply by meditation on such activities, one can attain realization of Brahman and thus become liberated from material bondage. So I'm going to skip down towards the end here of the purport where Prabhupada says, referring to these descriptions of the activities of the Lord. It says, yet they are displayed by the Lord to bestow mercy upon the conditioned souls. We should take advantage of the narrations of the activities of the Lord, which are meditations on Brahman in the most convenient and palatable form. So on that note, I'm going to read a couple paragraphs from the Krishna book, chapter 7, The Salvation of Trinavarta, where Prabhupada very nicely elaborates upon this point. It says here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is always full with six opulences, namely, complete wealth, complete strength, complete fame, complete knowledge, complete beauty, and complete renunciation. The Lord appears in different complete eternal forms of incarnation. The conditioned soul has immense opportunity to hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord in these different incarnations. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, janma karma chame divyam, the pastimes and activities of the Lord are not material. They are beyond the material conception, and the conditioned soul can benefit by hearing such uncommon activities. Hearing is an opportunity to associate with the Lord. To hear his activities is to evolve one's transcendental nature simply by hearing. The conditioned soul has a natural aptitude to hear something about other conditioned souls in the form of fiction, drama, and novel. That inclination to hear something about others may be utilized in hearing the pastimes of the Lord. Then one can immediately evolve his transcendental nature. Krishna's pastimes are not only beautiful, but they are also very pleasing to the mind. If someone takes advantage of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, the material contamination of dust accumulated in the heart due to long association with material nature can be immediately cleansed. Lord Chaitanya also instructed that simply by hearing the transcendental name of Lord Krishna, one can cleanse the heart of all material contamination. There are different processes for self-realization, but this process of devotional service, of which hearing is the most important function, when adopted by any conditioned soul, will automatically cleanse him of the material contamination and enable him to realize his constitutional position. Conditioned life is due to this contamination only, and as soon as it is cleared off, then naturally the dormant function of the living entity rendering service to the Lord awakens. By developing his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, one becomes eligible to create friendship with the devotees. Maharaj Prickett recommended from practical experience that everyone try to hear about the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. This Krishna treatise is meant for that purpose, and the reader may take advantage of it to attain the ultimate goal of human life. Jai. So, might as well just take this opportunity to thank Amala Bhakti Maharaj, and now in later days, Rabindranath, for so kindly reading the Krishna book to us so often at breakfast prasadam, giving us an opportunity to hear, you know, what Prabhupada just described as being incredibly, immensely important every morning while we take breakfast prasadam. So thank you very much for doing that. A little bit further on this point here, the importance of hearing. I'll touch upon another sentence Prabhupada gives in the purport here. To make this next point, it says here, matter of fact, the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his different activities are all confidential, even to the Vedic literatures. Now that's an interesting point right there. How could something be confidential even to the Vedic literatures? That, at first glance, kind of stumped me last night when I was preparing for the class, so I called up Mukundadat to ask him to get some further insight. And basically he explained to me that what's meant by that is that the Srimad Bhagavatam is only like a spot, a drop in the bucket in terms of the Vedic literatures. I mean, it's the most important drop. Undoubtedly, it's the most important drop. It's like, you know, if you have a whole bucket of water and you put in one drop of nectar or something like that. But it's only a drop in the bucket. The Vedic literatures are vast. And large parts of the Vedic literatures deal with karma kanda. Karma kanda is fruit of activities. You know, those prescriptions for how to worship the demigods to get this, that, and the other thing. All sorts of different material benedictions. Parts of the Vedic literatures deal with yoga. You know, the different yoga processes to elevate oneself and develop mystic powers. It's all there in Vedic literatures as well. Part of the Vedic literatures deal with how to elevate oneself to impersonal Brahman. You see? It's only the Srimad Bhagavatam that really, and some of the Puranas that really get into giving you the, you know, the pastimes, descriptions of the pastimes of the, you know, Vishnu avatars and Krishna himself. Right? Even the Vedanta Sutra didn't do that, and that's why Srila Vyasadeva had to write the commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam, because, you know, we're coming up to the part here in the Bhagavatam where, you know, Vyasadeva himself is lamenting, and Narada Muni comes and says, but what's going on? Why are you lamenting? And you know, you just finished writing all the Vedic literatures, and it's because he made the point that, well, he knew himself. He had neglected to directly glorify the activities and the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Narada Muni confirmed that, yeah, that's the reason. So then he gave him that instruction that you should now meditate in trance on the pastimes of the Lord and then describe those. So that's what's meant here, that by this phrase here, his different activities are all confidential, even to the Vedic literatures. It's just like to give an example. I hope it's a good one. Imagine you go into like a jewelry store or some department store, jewelry department, and they've got a lot of things laid out on the counter, okay? But they just do happen to have this one, I don't know, what's the highest carat gold and diamond? You know, they have this one piece of jewelry that is particularly exquisite. Una doge fala, you know? It's particularly exquisite, but it's so good, it's so valuable. They don't even bother. They don't even put it out on the counter. They don't even put it in the display case. You know, the really smart customers who come, you know, they know it's there. They know it's in the store, but they don't display. So it's kind of like that. It's there, but it's not easily accessible, displayable, manifest. So in the same way, you know, it's this information is there, but it's confidential. Confidential means, I looked up the dictionary definition of confidential, intended to be kept secret. See? So it's intended to be kept secret from who? From unqualified shoppers. So you got to be qualified to get this secret. So it's intended to be kept secret. Not from everybody, because otherwise what would be the point of existing in the first place? But it's intended to be kept secret from the unqualified. Those who are after the elevations of the heavenly planets, those who are after the mystic cities, those who are after merging into the impersonal Brahman, that's who it's meant to be kept confidential from. But it's not meant to be kept confidential from the devotees. Actually, just quite the contrary. That's exactly, you know, it's for the devotees, it's meant to be very well known. See? So basically, we can understand from this statement that we've been let in on a secret. See, this is meant to be kept confidential, but those, you know, the living entities that want to become devotees, they're let in on the secret. They're brought in to the confidential understanding of the Vedic literatures, which is to develop one's, reawaken one's dormant love for Krishna. And that's done through the mercy, by hearing these Vedic literatures, and that's made possible by the mercy of the spiritual master. You know, it's very important to hear from a pure devotee. I'll read I don't know if any of you remember this. This back in the old days when they had tapes, this was put out by the Bhaktivedanta archives. They put old Prabhupada's lectures on cassettes. And actually, so on the cover here, there's this beautiful picture of Prabhupada preaching down at Venice Beach. I think that's Brahmananda and Swarup Damodaran. I'm not sure who that is in the background there. But on the back, sorry? Nimai, okay. Learn about this traveling Sankirtan party leader. So, but on the back of each folder here, there's a very nice quote from the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll read it. It's King Prithu speaking. He says, "My dear Lord, you are glorified by the selected verses uttered by great personalities. Such glorification of your lotus feet is just like saffron particles. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet, the forgetful living entity gradually remembers his eternal relationship with you. Devotees thus gradually come to the right conclusion about the value of life. My dear Lord, I therefore do not need any other benediction but the opportunity to hear from the mouth of your pure devotee." And Prabhupada says in the purport that the transcendental vibration from the mouth of a pure devotee is so powerful that it can revive the living entity's memory of his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in other words, when you hear from the pure devotee, it has that effect of helping you reawaken your dormant love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's really important to hear, and to hear from somebody who is a pure devotee, the spiritual master. Actually, the spiritual master is in a very elevated position. Sometimes we, you know, can maybe lapse into forgetfulness of exactly how exalted the position of the spiritual master is. I found one very nice excerpt of a letter that Prabhupada wrote to Jaipataka Maharaj. in September 1969, and where he very nicely explains or gives some insight into the position of the spiritual master. So this is Prabhupada speaking now. He says, regarding your question about the verse in the prayers to the spiritual master, the spiritual master is one of the associates of Krishna. The prayers offered by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to his spiritual master have a special significance. His spiritual master is one of the assistant gopis. So the prayer was offered like that. Prabhupada goes on to say, on the whole, the spiritual master is an agent of Krishna. But either he is assistant to the gopis or assistant to the cowherd boys. He is on the level of Krishna. That is the verdict of all scriptures. Krishna is worshipable God, and the spiritual master is worshiper God. The exact words are sebya, and means worshipable, and sebak means worshiper. See, so that's the position of the spiritual master. He's a confidential associate of Krishna. You know, he's meant to be taken, related to us on being on the same level of Krishna. So that's who's letting us in on this secret. It's by the mercy of the pure devotee that we're being let in on this secret of the, you know, what's meant to be confidential. The secret of the Vedic literature is that human life is meant for reawakening our dormant love for God. There's that verse, maybe it's from the Padma Purana, it goes, Brahmanda, Brahmite, Kona Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Pashade by Bhakti Lata Bijay. After wandering throughout the universe, you know, that living entity, Kona Bhagavan Jeev, the living entity that's fortunate, Kona Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prashade Bhai, he comes in contact, comes in contact with the bona fide spiritual master. And by coming in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, he gets the bhakti lata bij, he gets the seed of devotional service, and then he's able to, you know, take that up and follow on from it. So, so the thing is this. Now I'm going to loosen up and speak a little bit. What's it called? Extemporaneously. This is it. We're meant to actually develop this Krishna prema. You know, it's not just a philosophical subject. This is the intention of the bona fide spiritual masters, Prabhupada and all the acharyas in this cyclic succession, that people like us actually get the opportunity to be elevated to the platform of Krishna prema. It's not artificial to be desiring like that. I was listening to a lecture the other day, and I heard Prabhupada say, he was talking about how when you pray to Krishna, we shouldn't pray for material things. And he gave the example that his spiritual master gave. He said, praying to Krishna for material things, when you come to devotional service and you're aware of this philosophy, what we're aware of, the knowledge we have, it's like if a king were to offer you a benediction and you ask that king for a pinch of ashes. Not very intelligent. Your king is offering you a benediction. And this was said by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati 100 years ago in India, when, you know, people maybe still used to cook their food with fires and they burn their garbage with fires, that's for sure. So ashes are all over the place. In other words, ashes have no value. They're available any place and every place, and they have no value. You see, so why would you ask a king? He's offering you any benediction and you're asking a king for a pinch of ashes. Showing no intelligence at all, right? So the analogy is, so praying to Krishna for material benedictions is like asking a king who's offering you, ask me for anything. It's like asking him for a pinch of ashes, asking Krishna for a material benediction. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj had to say. So then Prabhupada went on to say, so therefore what should be the correct thing to ask for? And then Prabhupada said, well, ask for half the kingdom. And if the king is offering you any benediction, you've pleased me. Now, what do you want? Ask me for any benediction. He said, Prabhupada said, the correct request should be, oh, give me half the kingdom. Okay? So what would be the equivalent, you know, in terms of like translating it back into our language? What would be the equivalent of asking for half the kingdom? You know, what would we ask Krishna for that would be the equivalent of a person offered the benediction by the king asking for half the kingdom? Let's see who's awake and thinking. What do you think? Take a wild guess. What? Yeah. Yeah. pure devotional service or Krishna praying like that. That would be the equivalent to asking for the half the kingdom, asking for the king for half, praying to Krishna for pure love for Krishna. See? And my contention is that, once again, based upon that specific instruction, it's not artificial. We're actually supposed to be desiring like that. We're supposed to be praying like that. For instance, in the Shashastrakam prayers, Lord Chaitanya, he prays, there's two prayers where that kind of, well, actually, all of them directly and indirectly address this point, but two in particular. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhaktir hoitikitri. I have no desire to accumulate wealth, to desire beautiful women, to have any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. And the next one, Ayinanda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishame bhavam buddha kripaya tavapada pankaja stita duli sarvasam vachintaya. He says, O son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna, I am your eternal servitor. Yet somehow or other I fall into this ocean of death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms, as your lotus feet. And Prabhupada said, in that same lecture, Prabhupada said, this is the standard prayer. This should be the standard prayer for the devotee. And he said, no other prayer. No other prayer. And he repeated it twice like that. No other prayer. No other prayer. Lord Chaitanya did not teach any other prayer. You see? So, you know, we're meant to be praying like that. We're meant to be praying, Kripaya Tavapada Pankajas Dita Duli Sarvasambhachintaya. You know, by your mercy, pick me up and place me as one of the atoms. Situate me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. Situate me in your devotional service. See? So, that's the so we're not artificial. We're not being artificial and desiring like that. Actually, this is a movement for helping people reawaken their dormant love for Krishna. You know, sometimes on people's birthday we chant that song. We say, "May you never take birth again." May you never, you know, we've all heard. It's not exactly correct. It's not that bad, but actually a more accurate presentation of a philosophy would be, may you develop love for Krishna, may you develop love. That's what it's really all about, because Lord Chaitanya is praying, mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad, you know, even birth after birth, I don't care, just as long as I'm engaged in, you know, bhavatad bhakti or hoitigitvaya, your causeless devotional service. So that's more accurate. That's more on target about what we're really all about here. We're really all about getting out of the cycle of birth and death, that's good. We want to get out of the cycle, but that's a byproduct. That's a byproduct, you know. And the pure devotees, you know, they're not really particularly worried about that one way or the other. I mean, they're concerned about, let me develop my love for Krishna. Let me reawaken my dormant love for Krishna. And if Krishna wants to get me out of the cycle of birth and death, great, wonderful. And if not, if he wants me to be here and to do more service here, okay, that's cool too. They're okay with that, you see. And so once again, you know, this is the thing. This is actually something that we're supposed to think about and take seriously. I'm going to present some further evidence for that, how this is really something that Prabhupada and the Acharyas wanted us to take seriously. For instance, in the morning, every morning, we say, you know, Vishnu Bhakti Pradidevi, which means I off my basis to Tulsi, oh goddess, you bestow devotional service to Krishna and possess the highest truth. So, you know, but then in the song, in the translation to the song that we, you know, we sing every morning in glorification of Tulsi, there's one line where it says, I beg you to make me a follower of the cowherd damsels of Braja. Please give me the privilege of devotional service and make me your own maid servant. How about that? I beg you to make me a follower of the cowherd damsels of Braja. Please give me the privilege of devotional service and make me your own maid servant. And actually, that's a doubly significant line, but I'm gonna get to that in a second. So we're praying like that. Now, who gave us that song? Prabhupada gave us that song. If it wasn't something that he wanted us to be thinking about and desiring, why would he give it to us? When I joined in 73 in Henry Street in Temple, Brooklyn, we used to do Tulsi Puja twice a day. That means twice a day we were praying for that. It wasn't just once a day. And I think in Los Angeles here, they, you know, back in the old days, it was the same thing. So it's there. It's being presented to us, given to us by our spiritual master. And aside from that, Lord Chaitanya himself, is that Rupa Goswami, sorry, after his meeting with Lord Chaitanya, the first meeting with Lord Chaitanya, after he had been instructed by Lord Chaitanya for X amount of days, I can't remember. But he offered a prayer in glorification of Lord Chaitanya. He went, Namo Mahavadanyaya, Krishna Prema Pradayate. Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namanigota Shreya Maha. But the first two lines are particularly significant. It says, Namo Maha Vadanyaya. Namo, I offer my respects, Maha, great, Vadanyaya, magnanimous personality. I offer my respects to the greatly, greatly magnanimous personality. Why? What was greatly magnanimous? Krishna Prema Pradayate. Krishna is Krishna. Prema, love for Krishna. Pradayate means bestower of. He's glorifying Lord Chaitanya as the greatly magnanimous bestower of love for Krishna. You see? So, you know, I don't think is he just kind of being, what's the word, euphemistic? I don't think so. I don't think it's meant to be taken in that way. It's like these, you know, the acharyas, they say something, it's factual statements. It's just that was his appreciation of Lord Chaitanya, that he was widely distributing Krishna Prema. Elsewhere, I don't know where it originally appears, but in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in Adi Lila chapter 1, I believe, verse 4, there's another verse also by Rupa Goswami where he elaborates upon this point. And he says, Anarpita chidim chidat karuna avatirna kalo samaparyatam unat dochvala rasam swabhakti priyam. And he makes the point that, I might need to help my notes for this one, that not only is Lord Chaitanya giving, you know, Krishna prema padayate, bestowing love for Krishna, but he's bestowing a very high grade or very rare, very elevated rasa, which is ujvala rasam, the conjugal rasa. So in other words, samaparyatam means to bestow, unata, elevated, ujvala rasam, conjugal love. So he's further glorifying Lord Chaitanya as being the bestower not just of any old love of Krishna, not Santaras, Dasharas, Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras, but Madhuryaras. And it's described in the conversation between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya in Madhulila Volume 8. It's described how, you know, if you're in any one of those rasas, you feel completely satisfied. You feel like, wow, this is the greatest, you know. I mean, the devotees who are in the Shantaras, they feel like, ooh, this is really good. And the devotees who are in the Dasharas, they think, wow, this is awesome, you know. But it's mentioned there from a comparative standpoint, you know, that everything that Madhurya rasa is the superior, is the highest rasa, and everything that's in the other rasas is included within Madhurya rasa. So this is what, you know, Lord Chaitanya is, according to Rupa Goswami, this is what he's descended as an avatar to award this, you know. So now, who's meant to be interested in these kind of statements? You think, is it the people out there that don't know Krishna from a bar of soap and couldn't care less? I don't think so. You know, is it, and who's the target audience? Let's ask that question first. Who's the target audience for these statements by Rupa Goswami? Is it those? No, is it them? I don't think so. Is it Sanatan Goswami, his brother, and the other Goswamis, or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, or Jiva, you know, no, they already got it. You see, it's us. We're the target audience. We're the aspiring bhaktas, the aspiring devotees of Krishna. We're the target audience for these statements. These statements are there to inspire us, to encourage us that, hey, everybody, wake up. I'm giving you an incredible opportunity. Lord Chaitanya is coming for the purpose of giving you love of God. You know, not just any old love of God, but love of God in the highest rasa. This is what's available. And you could say, oh, yeah, but, you know, it's okay, yeah, that sounds great. Thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, I know, I can't get that. It's like, it's that. Nah, that one. I won't. No, it'll never happen. Well, yeah, it'll never happen if you're thinking like that. But it can happen. I mean, you might be feeling, I'm not qualified. And you're right. If you're feeling you're not qualified to be benedictive with love of God, you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. Prabhupada confirmed that. There was one time he was on a walk with some disciples, and one devotee brought up the point in the course of the walk. He said, Prabhupada, it says in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, only people who have acted piously in this life and in previous lives and whose sinful activities are completely eradicated. He was referring to that verse, Yesham Tvantikatam Papamya, 28, I believe. Only those people can engage. And Prabhupada cut him off. Prabhupada knew where he was going, and he cut him off. You know, and maybe he was making the point that, you know, how is it that we've come to devotional service? Does that mean that we acted piously in this life and in previous lives, and all our sinful activities are completely eradicated? Because that's the general standard that one has to be at to be eligible for devotional service. And Prabhupada cut him off and said, I have created you, good fortune. See, so it's mercy. It's mercy. We're not qualified. We're not qualified. By the normal criterion, we're not qualified, you see. But by the mercy criterion, we're qualified. The qualification is that we're just willing to accept it. Prabhupada, on one occasion, he was talking about, another morning walk, and he was talking, Guru Kripa was, no, not Guru Kripa, what's his name? He lives here in Los Angeles. Gurudas. Yeah, Gurudas was speaking, and he was asking Prabhupada about Kripa City. There's a few devotees there. But anyway, at one point, Prabhupada gave the example. He said, Kripa City's like this, that I've got $1 million. I can't remember the amount he said. And I'm taking it and pushing it in your pocket. And say, here, take it. Here, take it. Like that. That's Kripa City. So in other words, that's what's happening. So we just have to be not going, no. Don't cover up your pocket, you know. Just let Lord Chaitanya stick that $1 billion of love of God in your pocket. He's trying to do that. That's what's going on here. And we just have to be receptive. We just have to take the mercy. Taking the mercy means, you know, engaging in the process very enthusiastically and being very conscientious to follow all the instructions of the spiritual master. That's being receptive like that. There's another point I wanted to make here. Oh, okay. Thank you, Krishna. So, Rasha Chahamrati Sani Vishnam, Taksmati Ganapon. Krishna comes to the rescue with knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So, yeah, so, and once again, in that conversation between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya, when they were discussing, you know, Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy about what's the goal of life and how do you achieve it? And Ramananda Roy was feeling a little bit kind of reluctant, uncomfortable, because, you know, Lord Chaitanya was a sannyasi, and he was basically he was a governor, kind of, but he was a sudra. You know, there's a great distance in their social positions. So, but Lord Chaitanya encouraged him. That's when Lord Chaitanya said that famous verse, Kiva Vipra, Kiva Nasi Sudra, Kena Noi, Yei Krishna Tattvaveta, Se Guru Hoi. It doesn't matter whether you're a sudra or a sannyasi or this or that. If you know the science of Krishna, say Guru Hoy, you're a guru, and I want to hear. So he convinced him, and Ramananda Roy was speaking. Anyway, at one point in the conversation, it came out that, you know, Ramananda Roy made the statement that the qualification, the main qualification for achieving this, you know, Krishna Prem is, does anybody know? Well, that's the foundation, but that's what I was looking for. That's correct. Greed, lolyam, the intense greed to obtain it. Yeah, what you said is correct. I just mentioned that we should feel that we have no qualification because we have no. But it's, in addition to that, in addition to feeling that I have no qualification, we should also have an intense greed to obtain it. Tatra lolyam ekalam mulam. That's the particular line. So, yeah, we should be greedy for this. There's actually a verse by Rupa Goswami where he talks about that. I know this, I know that. But does anybody know that verse? Archita, you know that verse? Okay. Nobody knows that one. So, but, yeah, so we have to have that intense greed to obtain it. And one last point is that... So you might be feeling, upon hearing all this, you might be feeling, well, you know, it's a little uncomfortable because Prabhupada never emphasized this very much. He never talked about this very much. He was, you know, Prabhupada talked a lot about the basic philosophy and the mission, you know. But I'd like to suggest that this is not incompatible with being serious about the mission or spreading Krishna consciousness in this sense that... Here in Los Angeles, I guess about 1975, plus or minus, it was at one time Brahmaswar, who was at that time the leader of the community, and he was preaching that Sankirtan is in the mood of the gopis. You see? So devotees were feeling a little bit, well, I don't know about it. So they wrote Prabhupada, and Prabhupada wrote back confirming, yeah, he's correct. See? So in other words, if you want to get in the mood of the gopis, the best way to get in the mood of the gopis is to try to give other people Krishna consciousness, because that activity, sharing, trying to give other, bring other living entities to Krishna, like that's what the gopis are doing. They're trying to not push themselves forward, but push other gopis forward. So being, you know, in that, by going out and preaching and performing sankirtan of any, you know, or trying to bring people to Krishna consciousness, you're engaging in an activity that's in the mood of the gopis, and you're developing that love for Krishna in that way. So it's not, the two things are not mutually exclusive, you know. By really focusing on the mission, how to spread Krishna consciousness, without any separate endeavor, you're doing the best thing you could possibly do to develop your love for Krishna. And one last final point on this is that, you know, just how these, everything, the way to do this is not, as I said, we're not being sahajas like this. It's just by following strictly the instructions of the spiritual master, we're doing, that's the way to do it. That's the way to best address this point of reawakening our dormant love for Krishna. Like, for instance, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's that, I've mentioned this previous, you know, in other classes, but there's that one part where Prabhupada talks about, it's in the chapter, The Glories of Haridas Thakur. And he talks about how Haridas Thakur was a Mukta Purush. He was chanting 300,000 names a day. And Prabhupada says, but, you know, that's the business of a Mukta Purush. We can't imitate that. But Prabhupada said, but we can follow in his footsteps by, you know, by chanting 16 rounds on beads every day and worshiping Tulsi plant. And he said, simply by doing this, one can become spiritually strong. And then he goes on to say, he said, therefore we request the Christian members of the Krishna conscious movement to follow Haridas Thakur's example rigidly. He said, chanting 16 rounds does not take much time, nor is worshiping the Tulsi plant difficult. The process has immense spiritual potency. One should not miss this opportunity. You see? So basically, if you think about that, if you meditate upon that, and you could paraphrase it, basically what Prabhupada's saying to us in that property, saying that the best thing you could be doing, the most conducive thing you could be doing to developing your love for Krishna, is to do that. It's just, I mean, what else could it mean? He's saying, you know, this process has immense spiritual potency. One should not miss this opportunity. Paraphrase. It's just another way of saying the best thing you could be doing to develop your love for Krishna is to be chanting your 16 rounds with a vow in front of the Tulsi plant. And if you're not going to do it here in the temple room, that's okay. You can have a Tulsi plant at home. But hey, Prabhupada's saying it. And who's Prabhupada? We just heard earlier. Prabhupada is, you know, either one of the assistant gopis to Krishna or one of the cowherd boys. So if you don't think his advice is worth taking, well, hey, you know, maybe better think it out again. This is advice coming from somebody who's on that level, and he's saying, "Do this. It's the best thing you could do to develop your love for Krishna." See, so, and in general, that goes true. That holds true for all of Prabhupada's instructions. We have to remember who these instructions are coming from. They're coming from a confidential associate of Krishna, somebody who's on the level of a gopi or a cowherd boy. So when we hear things like that, we should go, "Whoa!" Our ears should go, you know, should open up, and we should really go, oh, whoa, this is like, it's like getting a hot tip, you know, we're not gamblers, but if you were a gambler, it's like getting a hot tip from somebody, and, you know, bet on so-and-so in the fifth race, you definitely, it's like that. This is like really, you know, very important information, and so we should take it very seriously and really put it into practice in our life as quickly as possible. Okay, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Hare Krishna. Thank you. Okay, that's good enough. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.